This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and 90.9 FM HD2. You'll find us online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. So glad you could be with us this afternoon. On the program today, ideas for reducing energy costs, short and long term. Our guest is Jennifer Thorne Amon. She is with the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, or ACEE. She's also the lead author of The Consumer Guide to Home Energy Savings. The guide, now in its 9th edition, offers consumers information and advice on saving money on big ticket and small ticket items. It offers suggestions on where to begin and what to aim for long term. Listeners, I invite your questions and comments for our guest this afternoon. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. We also have a toll-free number. That number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Let me tell you a bit more about our guest. Jennifer Thorne Amon joined the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy in 1997. She's the director of the organization's Buildings and Equipment Program. She has authored dozens of publications and articles on many topics, including residential appliances, commercial lighting, equipment installation practices, emerging residential and commercial building technologies, and the progress of market transformation initiatives. The publication Consumer Guide to Home Energy Savings, Save Money, Save the Earth, is published by New Society Publishers. You'll find a condensed online version of the guide at www.aceee.org/consumer guide. Listeners, we look forward to your questions this afternoon. Join us with a phone call, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Jennifer, welcome back to the Afternoon Magazine. Nice to talk with you again.
Thanks a lot, Celeste. I'm glad to be back.
So would you tell us a little bit about the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, its history, its objectives?
Sure. ACEE was founded in 1980 with the mission of helping to improve the efficiency of the U.S. economy, with the idea being that energy efficiency is really a great source of providing both economic prosperity for the nation by reducing the money spent on energy, but also a great source for environmental protection. And, you know, back in 1980, climate change wasn't, was only an idea in a small number of people's minds. It hadn't quite captured our attention as it has today. But there were so many other issues that we were dealing with at that time. And now we find, you know, efficiency continues to offer tremendous opportunities. We've made great strides in improving efficiency throughout the economy, not just ACEE, of course, but many different players and actors. But there's still a lot more that we can do, and we find that energy efficiency really is the first and fastest source of new energy available to us in the U.S. It would, you know, could easily reduce our dependence on fossil fuels, and also makes use of renewables that much more affordable by reducing the overall load that you would need to meet with renewable energy. It's available here today. And so at ACEE, we have people working on buildings, technologies, transportation, in the industrial and agricultural sectors, and in the utility sector. And we do a lot of work, looking at policies and programs and technologies and trying to roll those out throughout the economy and giving advice to policymakers and other decision makers about improving efficiency.
In terms of policy, where are we now? What are the big issues on the national agenda?
Certainly, I'd say the two big things are climate change, of course, and energy security. Right now, I think any time within the next couple of months, we can expect to see climate and or energy legislation introduced in Congress. Both are things that are being worked on diligently. At this point, it's not clear whether those two will be packaged in the same bill or in separate bills, but they're both issues that Congress is really interested in acting on, as is the new administration. Climate change is something that I think finally there's a consensus that it's an issue that we need to tackle, and we need to tackle aggressively. And our energy consumption is the leading source of global warming emissions. So that's certainly top on people's lists. Energy security, and given our current economic climate, efficiency, makes that much more sense. And I think people can really see that if there are opportunities to improve energy efficiency throughout the economy, we're freeing up valuable dollars that can be put to other uses. One final thing that's great about energy efficiency, particularly working to improve the efficiency of our homes and commercial buildings, the buildings aren't going anywhere. We can't ship them overseas and have them tuned up and shipped back. So any work to improve efficiency in our existing building stock will be done here in the U.S. By U.S. workers.
Mm. Speaking of efficiency in our buildings, and we've seen, the real estate market is really tough right now. Is energy efficiency a factor in resale value of homes and commercial properties?
It's something that we're seeing increasing evidence of. It's not it's not clear cut. I think we're finding it, in the commercial sector. Certainly, it's something that people purchasing buildings are taking into their decision making. Building owners, commercial owners who own buildings for as money making businesses, find that they're getting an increased net operating income from their buildings when they improve energy efficiency, and that happens whether they pay the utility bills or their tenants. The tenant retention goes up. It typically is a good indicator for other good business practices. In the residential sector, we're finding that in a couple of ways, improved efficiency can really pay off. I think increasingly buyers are looking for better efficiency in the homes that they purchase. And there are also a number of tools that can be used at the time of financing a home. There's a product called an energy efficient mortgage that allows you to finance the cost of efficiency improvements into your mortgage. So you're getting, a much lower cost financing for doing those improvements. You're paying for them over a longer period of time. And the idea being that you can better make those payments because you're not paying higher utility bills. And a number of other types of mortgage products I think are going to be rolling out soon, and also maybe some property tax vehicles that local governments are looking into as ways to encourage homeowners to invest in greater energy efficiency.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon is Jennifer Thorne Amon. She is with the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, or ACEE. She's also the lead author of The Consumer Guide to Home Energy Savings. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with your energy questions. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL. Online at acEE.org, you have what you call a checklist for action. There are items there to do today, this week, this month, and this year. What are some of the things we could do today?
Right. Well, there are a number of things that people can do. And the reason we try to break it down this way is, just saying to someone, improve the efficiency of your home can be a pretty overwhelming idea.
Right.
So really breaking it down into things that allow you to do some no-cost actions and low-cost actions in the short term and plan for those larger investments that you might need to make over time. Certainly there are some things you can do that are largely just behavioral related. If you don't if you have a programmable thermostat and you don't have it programmed to take advantage of setbacks when you're away from home or overnight, you should certainly go and take the steps to program that. If you don't have a programmable thermostat, you can still get the savings. You just need to remind yourself to do the setback manually. You can go around and start to take an inventory of the appliances in your home and think about which ones are going to give you the greatest opportunities for savings, which ones are nearing the ends of their lives that you might need to replace. Replacing the filter on your furnace stocking up on filters in advance of the summer and the air conditioning season, and making sure that you change those monthly can make a big difference. You know, looking for opportunities to educate your family about turning out lights, being careful with the thermostat, turning down the temperature on your water heater. These are all things that people can do right away. Another step that I would encourage people to take is to go online at the Energy Star website, energystar.gov. They have a home energy calculator there, and you can use that. You can input information from your past energy bills, some information about your home, the structure, where you live, some of the appliances and equipment that you have, and it can give you a gauge of how your home performs relative to those like yours in your area. And you know, this is a really great help getting started, because I think for most of us, we don't really know if our homes are pretty good or if we're energy guzzlers. And so this will give you a good baseline to kind of judge how you're doing and some great tips for areas that you're most likely to see the most savings.
Yeah, tell us more about the Energy Star program.
Energy Star is a program that's operated by EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, and the Department of Energy. And the Energy Star label has been applied to all kinds of appliances and equipment, home electronics, lighting products. And in both the commercial and residential sector, it's also applied to new buildings and in the commercial sector to existing buildings. It's a way to identify those that are the best performing products. If you go to the Energy Star website, you can find lists of appliances that meet the Energy Star requirements. They typically are the among the most 25% of most efficient appliances on the market. In many cases, there's a database there that you can go in and look for specific products, or you can even look at a whole list of products and pick those that are among the most efficient. When you go out into the marketplace, you can find the Energy Star label for major appliances. Qualifying products will have the Energy Star right on the yellow Energy Guide label that's required on all products. So keep an eye out for that Energy Star. And typically the manufacturers have also put a lot of information on the products, identifying them as Energy Star products.
What appliances are the biggest energy hogs?
Typically in a home, of course, heating and cooling are the largest energy consumers, depending on where you live, and it's probably a bit of both there in Illinois. But after that, water heating is a major energy user, followed by clothes dryers, refrigerators, and freezers. And then to a lesser extent, you know, lighting, laundry, dishwashing, those all fall further down the list. Electronics can be a surprisingly large component in home energy consumption, but it's so variable because people's use of electronics is so different from home to home, you know, depending on whether you have a home office, how many teenagers you might have running around, and so forth. So that can make a big impact on your energy use as well.
How do you get a handle on that? How can you get everybody together and reduce the number of things that you've got plugged in? Because, you know, taken together, they're really, it can add up.
Yeah, it's true. One of the things that I think is most useful is to put things like chargers, all of the electronic peripherals that you have with your computer system or even around your entertainment system, on a power strip that has a switch. And when you turn off the switch on that power strip, you're cutting power to everything that's plugged in there. That's a great thing. You know, a lot of times we have like a station maybe where we have all the chargers for cell phones and Blackberries and, you know, iPods and all those things. If you can keep that kind of in one area and then just hit that button when you take the devices off and leave home for the day, you're not going to be drawing that power all day. Now on the market, there are a number of power strips that have a combination of plugs that are always on and those that you can turn off, and that can be good if you have a television or something else that you want to leave on so you don't have to reset all the settings that you would if you had unplugged it. So there are a lot of new products coming on the market that make it easier to try to manage that kind of energy consumption and eliminate some of the inconveniences and the problems that there were in the past.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned heating and cooling. Those are the biggest energy expense in most homes. And here we are, we're rolling toward the end of the heating season, but maybe we could talk a little bit about that. I've got a caller, though, who's waiting to talk with us, so I won't make them wait. But we'll talk about heating and cooling. Cooling is up ahead. And even if you don't air condition, what I think is great about Consumer Guide to Home Energy Savings is that there are ideas in the book, if you don't air condition, for reducing the heat in your home when it's really hot and humid, which it sure gets that way here awfully fast. May, June rolls around and it's hot and humid. Well, let's take this call now. A listener in Urbana, line one. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for your program today. I had a question about I was interested in what you were saying about the Energy Star going onto the website and entering my home's information so I can get a breakdown of what consumption I have engaging against other homes like mine in my area. I ran into this. We just moved to the area about 8 months ago, and I called my utilities because the property didn't have a history for 2 years because it was unoccupied, and I wanted to see if they had any benchmarks, and they said nope. It seemed like I was using an awful lot of water and an awful lot of gas for heating. So, could you repeat that or let me know what that website is again, please?
Absolutely. It's energystar.gov, and within that website, you'll find not only links to find out the specifics on any product that you're looking for, but also they have a home energy calculator. It's the Home Energy Saver, and I'm actually trying to pull it up right now so I can give you more of the specifics. There are also links there for some other services that are that may be available in your area, like Home Performance with Energy Star, where you can have somebody come out and do a pretty good sophisticated diagnostic of your home and really help you find ways to address some of the trouble areas that you've identified, including excessive water use in many cases, and ways to weatherize your home so you'll need as little heating and cooling as possible. It's really a difficult issue we find trying to uncover the energy performance of an existing home, particularly if you don't know the habits of the previous owner. Sometimes even if the home has been occupied and you get those energy bills, it's hard to know whether they were a family twice as big as yours or a single person that was never home to really understand how you could expect the building to perform. And those are things that that we're working on now and hoping to roll out some systems that are easily replicated and can give people really good information to help drive decisions. Without that information, we're all kind of in the dark. The website, the software tool that they have is called the Home Advisor, the Energy Star Home Advisor, and you can link to it right off that main energystar.gov page.
All right. I had one more question, if possible, about I'm a carpenter contractor, and often people are asking me, well, you know, what is the most efficient X appliance, and I've sort of explained to them my understanding of the system. It's like, you know, if you, it sort of like compares apples and oranges sometimes. Like, say you want to have the most efficient refrigerator. Well, it depends. You know, if you've got something with two compressors and it's 25 cubic feet of space compared to something that's, you know, say a third that size or half that size, you know, it doesn't really tell you. So I was wondering if there's anything in the Energy Star that sort of compares that. So I've always thought it would be better per cubic foot. Here's your energy usage. Does that
right.
make sense to you?
Yeah, you know, that's something that it's not really available through the Energy Star site. You can download. This is something that you know, a geek like me likes to do, but I know it's probably something that most consumers aren't, and it's an extra step. That you can download the list in an Excel file, and you can do some sorting to try to figure out those things. But the it's even a little bit more complicated than that, because the energy performance on a per cubic foot issue is going to be different, whether it's a side-by-side or a top mount, and the usage that you get out of that space is also a bit different. What we've tried to do to make it a little bit easier for people, on our website, on the condensed online version of the Consumer Guide to Home Energy Savings, and then also in the book, we try to walk people through some of the other decisions that you need to make when you're shopping for an appliance, like a refrigerator, which is a great example, that can really give you more information than just looking at whether it qualifies for Energy Star. And it's, to make things a little bit easier in narrowing down your choice, so you're not at the store going from model to model looking at the energy guide labels and trying to figure out which one has the best performance. A couple of things, rules of thumb are certainly to, buy, not buy a larger refrigerator than you need, unless, downsizing means that you're going to keep a second older refrigerator. And if that's the case, you're better off buying a somewhat larger new one if that's really what you need. The configuration of the unit certainly matters. Top mount refrigerators are more efficient than side-by-sides. They have, a smaller freezer surface area, and other issues about their design that makes them more efficient. So we really encourage people to think about, what kind of configuration makes the most sense for them, and if they would be happy with a top mount or even a bottom mount, which tends to be more efficient than a side-by-side. These are issues that it's a little bit difficult to sort and navigate strictly through the Energy Star data, although you can find it if you need. So those are ways that we try to encourage, some additional thinking besides just looking for Energy Star. And maybe Energy Star is the first step, and then there are ways that you can narrow it down beyond that.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. And also, we might mention here, Jennifer, that in the Consumer Guide to Home Energy Savings, and I would imagine also online, you have other resources listed in the back of the book, and I would imagine on your website, acee.org, there would be other resources online and publication resources.
Certainly. Yeah, we do have other resources there. The other thing that I would mention is that people should also, contact your utility, because they can be a great source of information about rebates that they may offer on very high efficiency products. Sometimes they've gone and done some of that extra legwork, and you can see if they offer a rebate, they may have higher rebates for the most efficient products that go beyond the minimum Energy Star levels. And it's always just a good idea to know what those rebates may be. And if you're in the market for a new dishwasher or clothes washer, you may also want to check with your water utility. Sometimes they have rebates as well.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener on a cell phone, line 4. Hi.
Hi, I'm looking to replace an older track light. And last week I looked at both the MR16 halogen track lights and fixtures, as well as the halogen that's a GU10 bulb that it uses. And I was wondering, is the savings that much between an MR16 and a GU10? And I'll hang up and listen.
Okay. Can you help there?
Let's see. I would have to look at the data on the GU10. I'm not that level of a lighting expert to know all the different products. I would say, though, that in general, some of these halogen products, depending on how much you're using them, they're not among the most efficient lighting sources. Better than typical incandescent lighting, but less efficient than CFLs or new LED products that are coming on the market. I would caution people that LEDs are something that we're hearing a lot about, but are certainly very expensive right now. I would recommend that the caller talk to someone at their local lighting distributor to find out what the lumens per watt values are, and they may well be marked on the bulbs for the MR16 and the GU10 to find out which of those is most efficient. And I would encourage anyone who's installing track lights or using halogens to use dimmer switches and take advantage of the energy savings from dimming those when appropriate.
Okay, so we're looking for lumens per watt?
That's right.
Okay.
That just tells you the light output
per
unit of energy.
Okay, all right. Very good.
And, I think that might be a good opportunity to just educate people a little bit about this idea of lumens, because one of the things that's very confusing in the marketplace right now, and is only going to become more so, is the change that we're going to be having in the lighting industry as the traditional incandescent bulbs that we've been using for so long are no longer available in the market. Starting in 2012 through 2014, there's going to be a phase out as the traditional incandescents are no longer allowed to be sold due to federal standards because they're so inefficient. A number of products will be entering the market to replace those and get the same light output, but for lower wattage. And so at the interim time, just like when you go buy a CFL now and some of the new halogen IR products, you'll see the manufacturers listing an equivalency. So they'll say, this is the light output equivalent to a 60-watt bulb or a 75-watt bulb. But it's something that I think we'll be moving away from, because with many different lighting products in the market at different efficiencies, those traditional wattage numbers won't really make sense anymore, and people will be looking at light output, and that would be identified in lumens. The lumen output is, after all, what you're searching for in a light bulb, not the energy use.
Okay. And incandescents are going to go away when?
Beginning in 2012 through 2014, the standards are phasing in on 60-watt and then 75 and 140-watt, the most common wattages of incandescent light bulbs. And there are plenty of products in the market to replace those, compact fluorescents being probably at this point the most widely available and most efficient option. Some of the manufacturers are introducing a product called a halogen IR that operates more that looks and is more like a traditional incandescent. But with a halogen IR, you can get the you can get about a third energy savings. So you can get some savings there. Later on, as of 2020, even those products will no longer meet the federal standards. During this time period, though, we're expecting a lot of development with LED lighting and other technologies that are just a vast improvement in efficiency. LEDs, they're still an emerging technology. The expectation is that they'll use about 10% of the energy for the same light output as today's sources. The compact fluorescents that are on the market today usually use only a quarter of the energy of an incandescent bulb. So we're talking about tremendous energy savings.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
You started to discuss what I wanted to hear about the LEDs. How is the technology developing there? Are they getting the price down? I've a little experience in using them, and they're initially rather expensive, and most of the ones I've seen, they haven't actually grouped enough LEDs to get a sufficient light output.
Sure. There's a lot of work I think remaining to be done with LED technology, particularly for consumer applications. Some of the work that's going on with commercial and other applications, I think, should really speed up development of a broader range of products and really get the drive the prices down. Right now, we're seeing LEDs used mostly in they're well suited for signage where you can use different colors. They're being incorporated. The federal standard now for new traffic signals requires the use of LEDs, where they have tremendous savings because they're very long lived. So you in places where maintenance and replacement is difficult, LEDs make a lot of sense. And again, for colored applications, they make a lot of sense. We're seeing some really promising pilots using LEDs for street lighting. which is, you know, a very high light output application, where they're performing quite well. But again, those are places where the maintenance savings can really help make them economically attractive. In terms of consumer lighting, we're seeing a number of products in the commercial market targeting offices, task lighting, where you can use a small lamp of maybe only, you know, 3, 6, 9-watt LED lamp to provide all the extra lighting you would need for a desk lamp where you have some level of overhead lighting in your office, or sufficient outdoor lighting to keep the lights, the overhead lights dim. As far as residential applications, many of those products are still somewhat expensive. I've seen LED downlights to be put in recessed cans. I've seen other types of table and desk lamps. But again, these are still pretty high-end products. But I think the major manufacturers have put forth strong commitments to introducing a broader range of LED products and also really bringing down the cost. One of the other unique things about LEDs is typically we'll find ourselves purchasing lamps and fixtures and products that have the LEDs incorporated in them. That's typically a better application of the technology than a LED light bulb, where I think there will be some replacement lamps on the market using LEDs. It's more likely to be when you replace a whole fixture or buy a table or floor lamp that has LEDs incorporated as part of the fixture.
The lifespan of the LED is quite a lot longer, say, than even that of a compact fluorescent, as I understand it.
Yeah, absolutely. A typical compact fluorescent has about a 6,000 to 10,000 hour life. LEDs, you know, the estimates are anywhere from 25 to 100,000 hours. So basically, they, you know, once you buy LEDs, they may be the last lights you ever buy. I think the one place where consumers have been purchasing a lot of LEDs are for holiday lights, and that's one of those places where, you know, it could be the last string of holiday lights you ever buy because they last so long. But, you know, there is additional work being done to improve the color properties of LEDs. They're very easily dimmable, which is also a nice thing and something that compact fluorescents are not as good at least not the current technology. I mean, it's improving, but it's not as natural a fit, I should say, as it is for LEDs. They also operate very well in cold temperatures, which is another benefit, particularly for outdoor applications in cold climates.
Actually, some of the compact fluorescents are fairly cold tolerant. I think it's the equivalent of a 200-watt bulb in my yard light here for, I think it's in its second year right now.
Mm-hmm.
And we get down as low as 14 below this winter, and it's functioned nicely.
Oh, great. That's good to hear. It's certainly nice to not have to get out and replace all those outdoor lights so often, isn't it?
Yeah. And ones that are way up high. I want to thank the listener for his call this afternoon. I've got a couple other folks waiting. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign, line 2. Hi.
Yeah, you touched on this a little bit while I was waiting, but can you talk a little bit more about the color temperature? I have not been very happy with compact fluorescents and the color of light that they give. And I know, for instance, that Home Depot sells, you know, different ones, and I've kind of experimented a little bit with the different color temperature lights that they have. But how does an LED light compare to the kind of light that an incandescent gives off versus some of the compact fluorescents? And I will hang up and listen. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. Yeah, color temperature is an area where, you know, the CFLs are, they're improving, but you know, there still are some noticeable differences. What people want to look for when you're buying a compact fluorescent or any light source is the color temperature, which is reported in Kelvin. So you'll typically see 2,700 Kelvin or 3,500 Kelvin. And the thing is, the lower the number, the warmer the color temperature. So it's a little bit kind of the reverse of heat temperatures. The cooler colored lamps are more like daylight. Some consumers do prefer those, and they buy those types of incandescents and fluorescent lamps. But to get kind of the warm, more yellow color of traditional incandescents, which many people like to have in their homes, the compact fluorescents, you can find those products. I would say, you know, in those cases, you definitely want to shop around. I would buy some of the make sure the products are Energy Star rated, and some of the larger major manufacturers' products. I think experience has been that they perform better in terms of color temperature, particularly for those trying to recreate the look of a traditional incandescent. LEDs use a whole different technology, and in fact, to get white light out of an LED, you typically are mixing colors, or they're mixing the components that make color within the LED. And they can even sometimes be tuned to make different colors. So I think that technology is going to allow us opportunities to get a lot more variation in light and color, but also recreate the traditional incandescent light as well. It's got a lot more flexibility because it's because of the type of lighting source that it is.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener in Indiana on line 3. Hello.
Hi. How are you today?
Fine. How are you?
Not bad at all. Really enjoy the program. I did have a general question for your guest, which I think is very informative, and I'm interested in your program. I was wondering the energy cost of an item, for example, a light bulb, isn't only the amount of energy it consumes for output of lumen. For example, in a fluorescent fixture, you also have a ballast, which has a production energy cost. I wondered, when we were talking about the energy efficiency of light bulbs and appliances and so on, whether or not the production cost in terms of energy and also the disposal cost, for example, in a bulb that contains mercury, was taken into consideration. And I'll take your answer offline if you understood my question.
Are we there, Jennifer? You think you got enough information? Okay, great.
Yep. Yeah, what you're talking about is often referred to as the embedded energy in the product. And certainly when we're talking more generally about the energy cost savings to the consumer, it is the savings in their energy bill. But the embedded costs are, cost of manufacturing, and they are being passed along to consumers in the prices of the products. The issue of mercury disposal of compact fluorescents, I think, is an important issue, and certainly one that is finally receiving more attention. Because the products do contain mercury, it's important that they be disposed of properly. And so we're finally seeing a number of the retailers that sell compact fluorescents, like Home Depot, IKEA, and some of the other larger retailers, setting up a take back so that you can take your compact fluorescents back to them for proper disposal. Many communities are starting to put together a municipal collection for compact fluorescents. So it is an additional step people need to take, and not just throw the compact fluorescent into the garbage can. But the nice thing is that because they do have such a longer life than our traditional light bulbs, we won't be disposing of them every couple of months. So that's one good thing, at least to know you won't have too many piling up to take for appropriate disposal. And most of the compact fluorescents that you buy with the screw base, so that they can screw into any fixture, the ballast is incorporated in the lamp, whereas in a linear fluorescent like you might have in your kitchen or basement, those products, the ballast is in the fixture, and typically will last anywhere from 10 to 15 years in between replacement. So in those cases, I don't think the added material in the ballast is as much of a factor in the overall cost of the product.
Hmm. I'm curious. I would imagine that this is the case, but in stores that specialize in selling lighting systems and lamps, that they might have a studio kind of setup. It's been a long time since I've been in I'm actually in the market for a new lamp, so I should check this out. But I would imagine that if you wanted to go and look at the the colors of and the various lighting options that you might find some help at a store like that. And I don't know about, I would suspect maybe in big box stores as well, like IKEA or Home Depot.
Yeah, I think, you know, the larger hardware stores, you know, it's more of a kind of help self-serve environment.
Mm-hmm.
They may have products mounted and lit displaying different lighting technologies, but I find it's very hard to see the differences in the products because they have so many together. And the lighting is, you know, in the big warehouse kind of space is a little awkward and in terms of comparing lighting. But, you know, the more traditional lighting retailers certainly have, you know, set up within their store typically room settings where you can get a much better feel for the look of the product and are probably more accommodating in terms of helping you maybe switch out the bulbs in certain lamps to get a feeling of for how they would look in, in more of a residential type setting. And I would encourage people, if you're not sure of a lighting retailer, a specialty lighting retailer in your area, the American Lighting Association is the association for those that type of retailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe through their website you can find lighting specialty lighting retailers around the country that might be a good source of that kind of information.
Okay, let's take another call. A listener in Savoy, line one. Hi.
Hi, I have some bad news. I have just replaced the second compact fluorescent light in this hallway fixture, and I'm quite sure they're not lasting as long as the plain old incandescent bulb. Now, whether it's because the hallway light goes off and on a lot of times, whereas other fixtures, they just burn maybe for a long time, and then you turn it off and stop reading and leave. I don't know, but I'm convinced that those haven't lasted as long as a regular light bulb.
Okay. Jennifer, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, a couple of thoughts. Certainly, very frequent cycling or very frequent, you know, on and off of compact fluorescent can shorten the lifetime, but it shouldn't shorten it that dramatically. A couple of questions that I would have would be, does your hall light operate on a dimmer or a timer switch? Those can cause problems for compact fluorescents that aren't designed for use with a dimmer or timer switch. So that would be the first thing that I would want to check. Secondly, I would look at the quality of the incandescent. I'm sorry, I keep saying incandescent instead of CFL. Of the CFL that you've purchased, and again, recommend that you purchase Energy Star qualified products, which should take some of these considerations into account. But if you continue to have the problems, I would certainly, and particularly if it is an Energy Star qualified product, I would make a complaint to the manufacturer and to the Department of Energy that oversees the Energy Star program for CFLs, because those products are supposed to meet pretty exacting testing requirements, and that could be a product that needs to be taken off of the Energy Star list. Beyond that, I would say if you have the problem and you find that that's just not the best application for compact fluorescence, that, you know, in a hallway where you may not be using the light very often or for very long periods of time, it's not really for general lighting, it's just, you know, on and off while you're traversing the hall, you may want, that might be a place where it makes sense to continue using incandescent or a halogen IR type product that isn't as susceptible to some of the cycling issues.
Yeah, we're here where we have to wrap it up. I can't believe it. We're out of time. But
really?
We mentioned air conditioning, and the cooling season is coming up. Now, some of us don't have air conditioning. Some of us do. Either way, number one, we either want to reduce the need for air conditioning or we want to make homes more comfortable without that don't have air conditioning. So can you wrap up here for us with a few ideas in how to make that happen?
Mm-hmm. Very quickly, I would say if you have a central air conditioning system, have your technician come out here in the spring before they get too busy and tune up your system, particularly if you don't remember the last time you had that done or if it's been a couple of years. That tune-up should cost $100, maybe a little less right now, and can pay for itself over the course of the year in energy savings and help you identify any other problems that you might, some maintenance that you might need to have done or plan for. If you don't have air conditioning, what you want to do is make sure you're doing everything to keep as much heat out of the home as possible, and that would include drawing the shades on windows that get a lot of sunlight to keep the sun out, keep it from warming up the space. Try to do activities in the home that generate a lot of heat overnight or in the evening during the cooler hours or very early in the morning, and that would include things like laundry, running the dishwasher. All of these things really contribute to heat gain in the home. And whether you have central air or not, it makes a lot of sense during the hot months to do those at the coolest time of day so you're reducing the heat buildup and keeping your energy bills as low as possible.
Well, there we will leave it. Jennifer, thank you so much for talking with us this afternoon.
Thanks so much for having me, Sheila.
Sharing your expertise. Jennifer Thorne Amon has been our guest this afternoon. She is the lead author of Consumer Guide to Home Energy Saving, Save Money, Save the Earth. The book is published by New Society Publishers. You'll find a condensed online version of the guide at www.acee.org/consumer guide. And ACEE stands for the American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy. And also this afternoon, we mentioned the Energy Star website, and I'll give that to you again. That is www.energystar.gov.